Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I don't have time. Look, black people's time is precious. It really is. Because by the time you figure out anything, your time is up. They got it set up that way. By the time you pay off anything, the thing that you paid off ain't worth having. That's from a house to a car. And while I'm on the subject, since I just mentioned it, I'm kind of bouncing around now, but I'm talking about application of a counter-racist code. Stop worshiping a car, any kind of car. And think of it logically. What is your car worth to you when you are not in it? The only time your car is worth anything to you is when you are in it. The moment you step out of it, it's a liability. I mean a total liability. You come out there and people are sitting on it. It's got 4 parking tickets. Yeah, somebody broke into it. Steering column is all messed up. It is not worth anything. It's just like all the rest of the millions of cars out there. Yet you are working 2 jobs paying for it. It's sitting out there on the lot, and you're inside the building trying to pay for it, and you're not ever in it. You spend all your time going to and fro those jobs when you're in it. And the white supremacists had that figured out, too. When they started making them, they got this stuff computerized. They got your whole existence computerized. They know where you are at all times and what you're doing and what's important to you. Now, who do you blame for this? You charge the person who did it, if you can catch them. But the blame is where? For everything that happens under white supremacy, who is to blame? Using logic and truth. And justice. Who? The white supremacists. Why? Because they're in charge. If I get on the ship and all the sailors are drunk and throwing whiskey bottles and, you know, swinging on the sails, you know, laying over there and not working. Anybody's been in the Navy or anything like that, and you come aboard and the ship is supposed to be out of port 2 days ago and everybody is just all over the place. Drunk, sleep, fighting. You don't deal with the crew. You go straight where? To the captain's cabin and knock on the door and say, what in the world is going on out here? All right. You took the position of being the captain of this ship. What about black leaders? What's that? Who said that? I heard you say that, because I know you know. Did you say that? That's true. See, that's an easy target. See, when you're weak and you feel weak and you want somebody to blame that's easy to blame and nobody's going to jump all over you for doing it, because the white supremacists certainly are not, or you wouldn't do it, you blame the black leader. So the code says, who are the leaders of black people under the system of white supremacy, using logic? The white supremacists, same culprit. So So just forget about blaming Miss Eleanor Holmes Norton or Colin Powell or Clarence Thomas. See, black people, that's a favorite sport. Give me one of those black people that I can stand up here on the corner and have a foaming at the mouth session about. Don't give me nobody white, because I can't deal with that. I know I ain't going nowhere with that. So give me somebody that I might run across in the hood that I can beat up on, and y'all won't be looking for who done it. A sport enjoyed by all. Waiting to see who the nigga of the week's going to be, the Tom of the week is going to be, so you can make a target of them. The code says stop it. Try to grow up. And on the job, same thing. Well, if it wasn't for these two or three Toms we got here, I wouldn't be in the shape that I'm in. Those people that you call Toms get their instructions from someone. Now, you grow up enough to get the guts to deal with the people where they got you their instructions. That is a requirement of the code. Otherwise, shut up. See, we're saying we're going into this new 21st century and all like that. We can't keep doing the same old thing. That's a wonderful habit that everybody can play. Everybody can play that game. In fact, the racists say, well, look, we got to make a couple of official Toms for the rest of the black people to get mad at. You know, so they won't be coming down here in our office. And they do that right on the job. People have asked me, say, well, Fuller, what do you do about these Toms on the job? I said, first thing you do is look in the mirror and see if you qualify. What exactly is an Uncle Tom according to truth and logic? Counter-racist truth and logic. A victim of white supremacy who is cooperating with white supremacy in any one or more of these areas of activity, and it's nine of them, any minute of any day in any measure. So when I go Tom hunting, first thing I do is look in the mirror and straighten my tie and try to really look like a good one, because that's what I am, because that's what's in that mirror. So just looking at the person next to me and say, you're a bigger Tom than me. Well, so what? Remember the scene in Gone with the Wind? You ain't the one supposed to say quitting time. I'm the one supposed to say quitting time. Two black people working out in the field. Yeah, right. One of them looks up at the sun and says, quitting time. And the big black guy says, you ain't the one supposed to say quitting time. I'm the one supposed to say quitting time. Quitting time. See, we're always trying to feel bigger than the next black person. But see, when the real man shows up, we get quiet. And then not only that, that has a devastating effect on black females. We get mad at him and her if she's white. And jaws tight all the way while you're driving or riding the subway or whatever, until you finally get to the place that you call your residence. And then you kick in your own door and knock her down, whoever she is, if she's black, on the floor. Because you mad at what happened down there today. Woman, how come you ain't got my meal? How come you ain't cleaned up this house? Oh, woof, 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 woof. The code says what? Don't ever hit a black lady unless it's absolute self-defense where you are in mortal danger. I don't care what she said. You are not qualified. Don't ever hit her. And the black ladies should have it in mind, I am never supposed to be hit. And if I ever get hit, first time, last time, get that slogan in your mind. Now, what does that mean? That you're going to hit him? No. It just means you're through with it. No point in calling next week and saying, I'm sorry. And every black male should understand this. Why? We keep talking about our women. We don't have any women, gentlemen. Why? because we are being had. You can't be subject to a white man and a white woman and then claim you got something. You don't have a woman, you don't have no land, you don't have nothing. This book ain't even mine. White people can come in here and tell me, get out of here. I want everybody out of here in 15 minutes. Now, I might, you know, out of what you call macho pride and whatnot, well, now, wait a minute. I mean, you don't have the right to, and you know, but I'm out of here.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, September 29th, 2016. So I have been told from the archives, not the Cows archives, some of the early lectures that Mr. Fuller did. I think that one is more than 20 years old at this point. But Neely Fuller Jr., visit the website producejustice.com, producejustice.com, producejustice.com. You can see the books available, Word Guide, the updated code book. You can get both if you need them, producejustice.com. This is our weekly segment on workplace racism. Feel free, dial in the number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Once again, this is not a spectator program. This is not a broadcast where you should just be looking forward to getting your popcorn or fruit snacks to sit back and listen to the commentary for an hour or two. That is not what this is designed for at all. I am sure if you are a black person, if you are a non-white person anywhere in the world, if you have a job, if you have had a job, you have had some experience with workplace racism. This is all about sharing observations, problems we have had on the job, just so that we can all be more informed about the tactics that racists use on the job, so that we can try to come up with strategies to neutralize things that they're doing. I think just hearing the similarity in terms of what people share with regards to workplace racism and how we get terrorized and abused on the job, just hearing the similarities, I think is very informative in many respects, just so that we can understand that it very much, to me, suggests that whites worldwide, that they have a code, a set of racist policies, tactics, strategies that they employ on the job to cause us problems, whether it's getting us written up, making sure we don't get promotions, making sure we don't get raises, and or just to get their kicks, to get amusement out of bullying and abusing black people on the job. I think it very much comes through when you get to hear the different situations in aggregate. I think that's a part of it. I think we have people who listen to this program who are younger. We have our young scholar in the Bay Area, young teen. He's not even in the workforce yet, I don't believe. But we have a lot of younger people who either have not started their careers or are very early in their careers, so they don't have extensive work experience. I think it's very helpful. Some of them have said so. It's very helpful for them to hear from people who are a little bit older, who have worked a little bit longer, who have more experience, unfortunately have been subjected to more incidents of racism on the job. It can be very, very helpful in hearing the type of things that you might unfortunately have to deal with from whites on the job. So please, this again is not a spectator broadcast. We should be sharing strategies, observations, and if you have figured out some things that work well, for sure, you should be one of the first people to dial in. If you have figured out some ways to eliminate problems, conflict, make sure that you get all your promotions on time, get your raises and everything, be one of the first callers to dial in and tell us how you did it. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. You can certainly email as well if you, for whatever reason, if you're not able to participate, if you're in a loud environment or whatever the case is, if you just want to email your commentary in and I can read it on the air anonymously, you can do that as well, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, and I'll make an effort to share. We had a person who wrote in, this is was via the Facebook page, when I posted the segment for workplace racism this week. I'll share that also. Incidentally, I was speaking with Mr. Scotty Reed, founder of the Black Talk Radio Network. We were talking about some of the situation that was happening with the Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton. He faced some criticism, not just this week. I think it had been happening for a while where he faced some sort of criticism for comments that he made about racism, comments that he made about the shooting of Mr. Scott in Charlotte, North Carolina last week, and the subsequent protests and what have you, where folks were upset with him about him not speaking about racism and coming out to say more about the shooting. And Mr. Reed, I thought he had an accurate observation. He said it seemed like all of this would classify as Mr. Cam Newton facing workplace racism. And I agree 1,000%. That's kind of the way I would view it as well, particularly if going on your job, people begin to act where you have a session where people stick a microphone in front of you and begin asking you your thoughts on this. It certainly, to me, would qualify as workplace racism. And I strongly suspect that some powerful whites spoke with not just Cam Newton, probably everybody on the Carolina Panthers team about this is what you say, this is what you do not say when you go out there for the media session. If anything comes up about that nigger that got shot in Charlotte last week, I am sure that something like that went down, and or some sort of meeting, chit-chat after the media session, questions about what was said when they went up and made their comments about the situation last week in North Carolina. The incident that the person wrote in about, they shared: my partner, who's non-white, works as a FSD at a hotel. The white co-workers get paid more than the non-whites. The non-white workers have been at the job longer than everyone else, but they still get paid less, and the white co-workers are supervisors, even though they have less time at the job. That sounds like standard racist operating procedure, where why I think we have at least one person on a weekly basis dial in where the whites have less experience, less education, less accolades, and they still, and less competence sometimes, and they still are able to come in and get promotions, better pay, whatever it is. It happens consistently worldwide under the system of racism, white supremacy, where you can be black and you will just be bashed and criticized for being overqualified, as they call it. All right. Other person wrote in their commentary. Let's see. Okay. This person wrote in via email. They said, recently, the vice president, a confirmed racist woman, I'd be curious as to how they got the confirmation, of our department sent out an email giving the entire department a heads up that we would receive another email with a link for the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, MBTI, test. If people don't know, this is like a psychology test. It's very popular. If you take any psych courses, it'll probably pop up there. I think for a lot of jobs, they give out this test. It's supposed to tell you the type of personality you have. I'm sure quite a few people are either familiar with it or have taken it themselves. Okay, continuing. According to the vice president, number one, I can assure you I learn something about myself each time I take it and find it to be helpful in understanding how to better communicate with others given the diversity of our personalities and the way we receive and react to information. This is all in quotes. Number two, all in quotes, building trust between and within our teams is an important value for our department, and understanding each other through the Myers-Briggs test is a key component for better teamwork. I anticipate you will not only learn something about yourself and your team members, but also provide some helpful hints in your personal life and interaction with your loved ones. Number three, Once again, thank you in advance for your participation in this and continuing to create a work environment that is respectful and thoughtful of all our team members. End of the bullet points. Continuing. The last bullet is especially humorous because she has been blatantly disrespectful and less than thoughtful to myself and others. No one word regarding who will see the results. Not one word regarding who will see the results. Not one word regarding confidentiality. This screams of yet another way to categorize, target, and discriminate. I already know my MBTI type. I refuse to hand this racist any information about myself on a silver platter. I've already been on the receiving end of her terror. I will not participate in the test, but I'd like to know if you or any of the callers have received this type of request from a current employer. Folks can feel free to share if they have. This is one of those where I would check to see if it's required. You might want to ask, is it required that we participate in the test? I know some people might have misgivings and think that that, you know, might cause problems for them, or might the whites that they work with might start working against them. If it looks like you don't want to take the test. You could also certainly, if you are going to take the test, you could certainly feel free, I think Thomas suggests regularly, be deceptive. Feel free to not answer accurately. You can just go through and circle, pick things out randomly and see what happens if you do it that way. That might be an idea as well. But folks, if other people have been required to take this test on a job, or if you, you know, decided that you did not want to take it, did that cause any problems or what have you, feel free to chime in and share. I would be interested, as I said, to know how it has been confirmed that this is a racist woman that is encouraging, recommending folks to take the test. Feel free to share if you're listening in, the person who emailed this commentary. We will get to the folks who dialed in via the phone line. Again, this is not for spectators. Share observations. It is always good to hear from folks. I am sure there's no way we can have 20, 30, 40, 50 people listening to the program, calling in no less to the program, and have folks not have experiences with racism on the job, even if it's not happening directly to you. I say all the time that we should be making observations. You're seeing what's happening to your other non-white colleagues and or seeing things that are happening to whites that you know would not happen to you or would not happen to another non-white person if they're given leeway or if they're given a certain discretion about things that have happened on the job. I've also stated consistently, make sure you are reading your policy and procedure. Really make an effort to not wait until something has happened to then go and read the policy and procedure. Read it in advance. That way you can, you know, you don't have to sit down and read the whole thing in one setting. You can divide it up over a week, even 2 weeks. Just read a little bit at a time, and that way you can really go through and see, are we following the rules as they have been laid out in our workplace manual? That is very important and can even come up, because I think a lot of our callers over the years have mentioned when whites move to say, well, you're going to get in trouble for this here, and we got to write you up for this, that they go and look, and it's not even in accordance with their stated policy. That can be very, very helpful to you in some situations. Make sure you've gone through it, and as I've stated, share. If you go through that policy and procedure and some things are not accurate or the wording is confusing or it doesn't make sense, definitely share. Anything that pops out that's profound, significant in policy procedure, make sure you share that with us as well. We will get to the people who dialed in via the phone line. If you dialed in with a hand up, your line should be open. Feel free to share.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to Gus, all the listeners and the callers. So today I came in, we have a restroom all the way at the back of the plant. This is my first time using that restroom, and I noticed in two of the stalls, people had written in marker and in ink pen, vote for Trump and also make America great. And I wanted to also share something that happened a few years ago. When I worked at a plant in, I believe it was Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, there was a white female. She was from Croatia, somewhere in Europe. I think that's the right pronunciation. It was me, her, a non-white female from the Philippines, I believe. Another non-white, non-white female. She was black, and another non-white Hispanic female. We all worked as a group in this one area. At that time, I was very, very ignorant to how racism worked. So my opinion would have been, this is a good white person, the female that is. She used to call out white men on a daily basis and women as being racist. Even sometimes I didn't understand why would she say it. It was a few times that she actually went against supervisors and tried to protect like me and other non-white workers on the job. And there was one particular time where I had an issue with a mechanic there. And she said if they was to try to fire me, that she was going to quit. And she was trying to encourage other non-white people to go against the company. So that way I didn't lose my job or get in trouble. But yeah, she identified herself as white maybe one time. And I never really heard her identify herself as being white. At that time, I believe it was 2008, and President Obama was running for president. So me and another non-white guy, we thought that there was going to be somewhat of a race war. And we were saying stuff amongst each other like, well, yeah, if someone tried to do something to Fatima, that was her name. Actually, she looked more Hispanic, and she had like a Hispanic accent, but she said that she was from Europe. She was born and raised in Europe. So, like I said, I was very ignorant. We were saying stuff like if black people try to attack her because how she basically protected us, that we would engage in counter violence against them. So that was something I wanted to share. And I guess just like Gus said, if you want to call anyone Sambo or something like that, you can add me to that list. I was very ignorant, but I don't believe in good white people now. So that was all I had to share. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. I think we just talked about this on the program yesterday, where you will have someone classified as white, and they will say, well, hey, I'm going to go on the attack. If you are mistreating any dark folks around me, you're going to have to deal with me and get up in, you know, another white person's face and, you know, shake their finger and do lots of stuff. That does not mean that they are not racist. I think, as I stated explicitly on the program roughly 24 hours ago, that a lot of times you have racists who just have a disagreement about how racism should be practiced, and sometimes you have whites where they just have squabbles with each other. In their squabbles, they might just accuse another white person of being racist. I've seen that before too, where both of them were racist. It was just that these two whites didn't get along. They were having conflict for some reason. So a part of how one white person decided to attack a different white person was to accuse them of being racist. I've seen that before too, and I think sometimes, unfortunately, non-white people, victims of racism, we get confused about that and think, oh, this is, you know, a wonderful white person. This is great. She's looking out for us. And that is not the case at all. Incidentally, the first portion of what you shared about the vandalism, racist graffiti in the restroom area, I suspect that there will be more of that. And it'll probably just become overt communication where whites are talking about the election and who they want to win and all of that as it gets closer to November. So I would just encourage folks to be codified and to already be thinking about what you are going to say. If this comes up, if they ask you what you thought about the debates, who you're going to vote for, what you think about the whole campaign, already be thinking about, you know, how you will respond to these questions, what you want to say, what you don't want to say, so that you're not, you know, surprised and then trying to come up with something on the spot in terms of how you want to reply. Other folks, if you have questions and or your own situation you want to share, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to the callers. Yeah, to the last guy, man, I don't think that Croatian lady was white until she stepped off the plane here in America, because the Croatians are certainly not considered white in Europe. They're like those Kasavi brothers were. Remember when you had that show, Gus, and that lady came on, and Chechnyans and people from that region, they're not treated like white people in Eastern Europe. I'm pretty sure that she's enjoying her whiteness in America, because she wasn't being treated good over there at all. However, she is still white. I heard a fearful about the debate and the ensuing things that's been going on in the news. The one thing was I kind of got put in a position where I had to let this white female know that, you know, although I do talk to you about Trump and stuff, you know, I'm not voting for him. I think he's big time racist. So she's like, yeah, Thomas doesn't think he's a racist. You know, she's saying this to the guy I work with. If he looks at me, I said, oh, wait a minute now. Trump is 100%, 1,000,000%, definitely a racist. She looked shocked. Like, you know, I said, Hillary, I just think is a bigger racist. But he's definitely a racist. You know, but it hasn't stopped her making her comments. So, the guy I work with, black male, confused. We do have genuine conversations. He doesn't quite, I think he gets it, but he doesn't want to accept it. So it's slowly, you know, coming up on him. So I get to work yesterday, and just for context, the lady who's our boss and him, they've worked together for 8 years now, and he's worked at the company for almost 30 years. And he and this lady does not get along too well. They have a very cordial, very professional relationship. He feels like she came in and she changed the way things were done before, and it, you know, put him in a position where he lost a lot of money that he used to make in overtime and other things. And he also had got wind that when she first started, she had tried to get him fired. And almost at that time, 20 years, dedication to the company, let the boss call him in the office and explain, hey, you know, I don't know what's going on with you and her. She came to me, you know, listen, just appease her and let's move forward. And he's done that, but he has a very ill way of thinking about her. And, around each other, they're very professional, cordial, smile. Hey, how you doing? Okay, great. So one of the big complaints he had was prior to her, they used to always get tickets to the games. And since she's come, she's, only people that could get tickets are the top people now. And when he, you know, the old guy was there, they used to let the lower people get the tickets first. And big deal for him. So he hasn't been to a game in 8 years, ever since she started. And he mentioned this quite a few times to me. So when I got to work yesterday, he said, oh, come in here. So I come in the room, and he's like, he has these 4 Yankee tickets. And he says, man, I thought about you. I go around today. She's all nice. Hey, come over here. Look, I have these tickets for you. I want you to take your friends and your family. Have a good time at the game tonight. And he said, I was so happy. And then I got back to my desk, and I see that it's supposed to rain tonight. She gave him the tickets, knowing that it's probably going to be a rain out. And nobody probably wanted the tickets, right? So he said, I thought of you because, you know, it sounded like something you would have said she would do. And I just can't believe this, man. This is crazy. So he says, you know, but I look at the forecast now, and it might not rain. So he asked me if I wanted to go to the game. I said, no. So I went back to my desk and everything, and continued to work. So as the day went on, he came over again, and he asked me, hey, come on, my friend canceled. I need you to come with me to the game. So, we were on a break, so I was a little uncodified. So I told him, I'm not going to watch a bunch of crackers, watch a bunch of beatles play beast baseball. So he starts cracking up laughing. The day ended, came home, everything. So got to work today. He says all his friends canceled, so he goes by himself to the game. He has the 3 tickets, and he says he sees this white couple coming up. And he says, I thought of you, because I know you would say, oh, don't you give nothing to the white people. But, I sacked them, and at first they didn't believe me. So I walked with them to the gate, and they checked to see that the tickets are real. I'm telling them I'm just giving them to you for free. They came from out of town. They were so happy, And then I saw a Mexican guy. I gave him the ticket, and, then he goes to the game. So he's sitting in the seat, and he's like, I wanted to call you because I just kept thinking of you. The whole night, the white people said nothing to me. They didn't buy me no drink, no nothing to eat. The Mexican guy, he got me a beer. He got me a chicken finger. These people act like I didn't give them nothing. They're standing there taking pictures with each other and everything, and he just felt so insulted. And I just, he said, I feel about you because you always say don't have white people. I say, yep, absolutely. And that was my workplace racism. I'll mute my line.
Moral of the story, don't help white people. Hopefully that will stick with them. That is a very tough one. I know that from personal experience. People have non-white people, victims of racism. We have a very hard time with that one, myself included. It's centuries of trauma and grooming, programming, contamination that encourages the exact opposite. And frequently, if you don't help white people, that could be problems. You might even be subjected to direct violence if you are not about aiding and helping white folks. But that, I think, would go a long way. Let's just stop helping whites as much as possible. Also, and this is totally not a critique at all, just do say on the program consistently, let's try and, I think it's best if we can try and stay in the question lane as much as possible on the job, even though sometimes, you have to make your statements or what have you, say what you need to say. But when the race soldier, the white woman, when she said, Thomas, he doesn't think Donald Trump is a racist, if folks want to be in the question lane, just be like, did I say Donald Trump was not a racist? If you just want to make sure that we're in the question lane. But that's totally not a critique, no issue at all with how you responded to her, basically stating something that was not true about your assessment of Mr. Trump. Folks have questions, what they've heard thus far from callers, or if you have your own situation that you'd like to share, you should be with us as well.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your feedback earlier. I wrote in about the Myers-Briggs test, and I wanted to explain of how I've confirmed that the VT is a racist. Sometimes she will email us for data, and we have to run reports and give it to her in a spreadsheet format. And I've noticed that with myself and other, non-white colleagues, that if we give her data, she'll respond that that's not what she wanted. But then if the white director sends her the exact same information we just sent her, she's like, oh, my goodness, thank you so much. This is just what I needed. And it's just the way that I noticed that the difference in how she treats the non-white people compared to white people. Because it's like if a non-white person says something or gives a solution, it's just, okay, thank you. And then if a white person suggests the exact same thing, like it's the best thing since sliced bread. So it's just, and then she sabotages like on purpose. It's just all these little things that she does, and I'm just noticing it. So yes, it's there.
Wow. Thank you for the additional information. Appreciate that. And that's what I mean just about observing, even if it's not something directly happening to you, although it seems like in this case when you all submit the data, this is happening to you, but also paying attention to what's happening to other folks around you in the office to be able to note that it's not just you. When other non-white people submit their data to her, it's the same thing, that there's a problem or this is not what she requested, and then paying attention when someone classified as white does so. It's, great. No problems. Great. We can move forward. Just being observant on the job, which is something when I was more confused, I didn't pay attention to things like that either. And I think a lot of times just being mindful of what's happening around you, you will see a lot more. If you understand racism, white supremacy, you will note those type of things happening all the time. Was it required? Did they explain, you know, that this is something that you have to do on the job? Or was there any option where you could say, hey, I don't want to participate in this?
You mean for the Myers-Briggs?
Yes, ma'am.
No, she just sent the email saying that we were going to, like, have a link to take it. She never explained if there was any confidentiality, if we could opt out of it. Like, none of that was explained. So Tuesday, I actually emailed the person in HR who sent us the link, and I just responded only to her, and I asked her, who will see the results? Like, who will see my individual results? And I haven't heard back from her yet. So I don't know if she has punted that to the VP and now they're sitting on it and stalling on it or what. But I know the HR person who sent the link has not responded regarding who's going to see the individual results, whether it be the VP or my direct supervisor who's a director or what.
That is a great question in terms of confidentiality, do you have the ability to opt out of it? Have you made a decision about whether you're going to take it, or if you do take it, you know, how seriously you go about completing the test?
Well, I've read the handbook, and I don't see anything saying that you are required to take any type of psychological or personality test. So the deadline is like October 7th, so I'm not going to be taking it. If I'm asked, where's my test, I'm going to say, well, I already know what mine is. I've asked the question about who's going to see it. No one responded, so obviously it hasn't been explained. And then I'll just say that I'm uncomfortable without knowing fully who will see the result, and they haven't explained that, so I won't be taking it.
Awesome. Awesome black self-respect, in my opinion. Do you have any concerns that might cause more problems, that they might try to make things difficult for you, retaliate for if you decide you don't want to take it?
Well, she's been making things difficult for me anyway. What she does is that she'll hop around to different people. So she'll make things difficult for me this week, and she'll cool out. She'll be on someone else, and then that's how she does it. So I've already been recording every meeting that I'm in with her. I've been pulling emails and filing them away. So I already have documentation. So it'll just be something else I'll add to the documentation of, like, all her harassment and terrorizing.
That sounds exemplary. Exemplary counter-racist work to me. You did ask if, you know, if we have any listeners or what have you who have had to take this test, right, in the workplace to just see if anybody else has had
yes.
to, right? Have we, anybody that's with us, has anybody else had to take any sort of personality test for the job that was a requirement either once you got the job or part of the employment process where you had to take this personality test?
Mary Heard.
Heard
oh,
both.
Correct.
Okay.
I grasped him. I'm sorry. Yeah, we just had to take a personality test for the job, as a matter of fact, maybe 2 weeks ago. And, you know, the supervisors had all of the data compiled, and they called us all in the room and told us what our results were and who we, I guess, work better with or what type we work better with. And, you know, I mean, that was it. But they did require us to do it. Now, I don't think they said that, you know, if you don't, you would be fired. But, you know, they kind of, you know, wrenched it around to, yeah, it's kind of mandatory.
Did you completed, like, seriously, or did you use some deception in how you answered the questions?
I used deception.
Hmm. Did they address confidentiality about who was going to see the results?
It would just be HR would see the results, and I'm thinking the management committee.
Hmm. Interesting. I would even be interested.
I've taken several tests like that before and never really took them seriously.
Hmm. I would even be interested in just thinking about it, that sort of thing. Does that, like, become a part of your personnel file, like, on the job, like, for the entirety of your employment there? Is that something that they pass along when you leave there, if you go to another company? Is that sort of information kept on file? Like, I'd be more curious about it now, just thinking about the confidentiality aspect, because it's been my experience that racists, they network very well, particularly about their Negroes.
Yeah, the way I took it was that it would be going in, like, in our file, but they said we'd take one, like, maybe every 2 years.
Hmm.
And that's just, I guess, the way they kind of said it, just to get, like, you know, new hires who come on, just so they can get a chance to take one. Like, they won't make it a part of the hiring process, which I don't know why. That's very confusing to me. But, you know, we always say the white supremacist is the master of deception. So, you know,
it is. Fascinating. Fascinating. Raj, you were going to respond to this as well?
Yes, actually, I took those tests on at least three different occasions, but none of the occasions were mandatory. They were more presented at the particular places that I worked. They were presented as something that was just, like, for you to do. It wasn't anything that had to be turned in by a specific date or given to anyone in particular. When I did the test on the job, though, even though it wasn't mandatory, and people just doing it, I guess, for fun, and they would just tell each other what their results were, I still used deception anyway. And because I had a link to the information that I could utilize off of the company's computer system, I did it on my own just to see for myself how it panned out. But what I did on the job, I used deception every time, except for one time. There was a job that I was laid off from, and they had given me a severance package, and in the package was, like, an employment, like, coaching thing where you go and meet with somebody in particular, and they gave you information regarding building a resume and how to enhance it so that it's most optimally to your favor as far as the creation of it and as far as helping you get a new job. They also had that test as a part of it, too, just to kind of give you insight to yourself. It wasn't something you had to turn into the person that you were working with. But essentially, it's kind of giving insight into how you function so that you can kind of adjust your behavior, I guess, in job interviews and things like that, based on that personality type to get the optimum out of that interview. So things like that. But as far as, like, work situations, they were never mandatory. They were always presented as something that was fun, but just to do on the job. And like I said, I still don't, even if they had made it a mandatory thing and they said only specific people would have access to it, I just don't believe them, that they could tell you that and then next thing you know the president of the company is looking at it and everybody else, even though they actually telling you, oh, it's only HR and, you know, it's only this person or that. I always think in my mind, you know, white people lie all the time. I don't trust anything they say, especially when it comes to employment, because they turn things on you on a dime. You can be in the middle of you know, doing something one way, and then literally within 24 hours, they'll come to you with some new rule or some new thing that preempts and trumps whatever you learned the day before. And then, you know, and they do that all the time. So to me, anytime they say they're going to, you know, as far as the way that something's going to be used, I just think they're going to use it to your detriment anyway, especially if it has anything to do with psychological profiling, which is exactly what that is. And for the black male who said that they make them take it every 2 years, that's probably like a psychological assessment to see how your behavior on the job has shifted since they have done specific things. And if they can mark what has transpired within that 2 year period, they can see what decisions they made as a company or certain changes in your personality based on those decisions potentially and whatever was going on in your personal life. So these are all things I think about. So I just want to throw that out there. But yeah, when I did it, it wasn't mandatory. And I do have my own workplace situation I can talk about later. Thanks.
I agree with that, Rob.
I've had this
I've had to do that on two jobs. One of them we took it twice. The other one we did it once. Actually three jobs, actually. Two law firms and a financial institution. All three jobs for taking the test. You didn't have to take it, but if you did take it, you got a $100 Metro card at one place. Another place, they gave you a gift card for like $50 to Best Buy for taking the survey, or taking the personality assessment test. And I think the other place, you got an $80 Metro card. But they gave incentives for taking.
I did want to add to what I just noticed, I just thought about. Some of the departments, not mine, but some of the departments must have had a meeting about the test, because I did notice maybe a week later that they had like where their results were, they had them hanging on the outside of their door. And so I guess they must have voted and said that, you know, they were fine with, you know, actually displaying that information, but I made that notice, though. So. I also had a workplace racism.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, guys.
I was just going to check really quick to see if anybody else has had to take the test, either if it was mandatory or if it was something that was kind of voluntary and not as strictly enforced. Anybody else have to take this personality test for employment?
I was just, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I was just going to add in my experiences, I never had to take anything like that. My thoughts on it is that it would have been something on the entry level to take. I think law enforcement takes some sort of psychological test, but I never remember doing it with the fire department. If it was something as an option to do, I would have, of course, would have declined myself personally to do it. I try to stay as protective of my personal thoughts and ideas as much as possible. And I can see, though, on a job to whereas they would delay the information about being a requirement until you were already supposed to have taken a test, and have the supervisors being very deceptive in their approach to the employees about the test. Sometimes they even are coached in that way to the employees. Also, you know, there's a lot of employment where the union of that job is either non-existent or very weak, to whereas on a job like the one that I retired from, the union itself probably would fight it in itself. It just sounds like something that a union would fight, that the employees should not have to take something like that. But that's my experiences on that. I never took anything like that myself. And even if I did, I would have had a cheat sheet. And the only thing that would have been recognizable about my paper would have been my real name. That's it. Everything else wouldn't be anything that they really wanted to look into. That's all I have to say on that. I'll talk about my own workplace racism and later on, and just listen to everybody else's and comment on or ask questions. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Did we have anybody else who had to take the personality test? Anybody else? Any experience with that? I will take it that that is a no.
Can I be heard?
Oh. The caller 1719? Okay. 1719, did you have a comment?
Just real quick about the personality test. I'm a 50-year-old black male. I've been in corporate America and the U.S. military. I've taken so many personality tests as training exercises. In fact, I just took one 2 days ago. Right now, I work for the federal government. And it was never required, it seemed, but it was always a part of the actual exercise or the actual training that we were actually getting. And I don't worry about those tests, to be honest with you, because they are so flawed. The questions are flawed. The analysis is flawed. And just a little bit of just a little analysis of the questions show you just how flawed they are. So I don't know how many I've taken, 20, 30, 40. It doesn't matter to me who sees them. And that was my comment.
Fascinating. Do you make an effort to? I'm just going to ask, do you make an effort to answer the questions truthfully, or do you just fill out whatever the response is, bubble in the response or what have you?
I always want to make an effort to answer the questions truthfully, but many of the questions are so flawed, but it doesn't matter how you answer, it's going to come up flawed anyway. I don't really believe it gives me provides a direct example of or direct category of whatever I should be in. Even the other day where the test had 144 questions, and clearly, the results of that test told me again that it wasn't clear. The outcome wasn't clear to whomever designed it and what the results were, where I should fit. Doesn't matter to me how I answer, but I do try to answer truthfully because they don't know.
I guess retired firefighter and Roz, were you all going to add something else?
Yeah, I was just going to ask the last caller, could he give an example about what he means when he says the test is flawed? Because he just recently took one, so he is probably still recent on his on as far as his memory. Give an example about what you mean by flawed. I never took one before, so I just wanted to know.
Well, the question might ask what this particular one asks: true and false questions, and it puts you in a certain. They would give you a certain scenario, and say, when confronted with the situation, do you stand down from that conflict, or do you engage in that conflict? Do you shrink from it, or do you meet the challenge? And realistically, it depends on the conflict, and it also depends on the circumstances of that conflict. It depends on how you're feeling at the time and who's a party to the entire conflict. So you really don't get a clarity by yes or no in those situations. It's all in the context, which
right.
they never
right.
really truly add.
Therefore, it's not really a wrong answer. It's just based on whoever the test analyzer on how they feel about the answer you gave.
Correct. It's never a right answer or a wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
just want to know what you would answer without giving you the full context of what the question is.
And I can see it where your name would be on the test, and if it was somebody that has some sort of intel about you, they probably can make some sort of analysis that may not be to your best interest. I can see how that could be used in a sense against the employee that took the test.
In many situations, I can see where that is actually correct. In your workplace, of course, you're in a confined environment. with a defined group of people in the military and in the federal government. And where I work right now, the world or the scope of where I worked was worldwide, and now is nationwide. So again, you know, it all depends on the certain circumstances that you're involved in at that time. And I believe you are absolutely 100% correct.
Thank you, sir, for your answers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Raj, you were going to comment?
Yes. You made me remember that I have had to take morality tests before. That's something that I've had to take where they will ask you questions about decision-making in specific types of scenarios, whether it's being a witness to something happening that was illegal or just basically morality tests. And there was like at least two jobs where I had to take those tests as a part of the hiring process. And essentially they want you to answer, I would say, in a way that would always have you fall on the side of right anyway. So they weren't really hard to get past. Some of the questions would be asked in tricky ways, but essentially they were morality tests rather than personality tests, even though morality tests are a form of personality tests in and of itself. So, yes, that did have to take those, but it was within the hiring process. And then after that, it was, you know, once you passed that aspect of it, then essentially you just had to pass the interview and all of that stuff, and then they make the final decision. So, yes.
Most interesting. Most interesting.
I have a question.
Yes, sir, Thomas.
I have a question for the gentleman, the military gentleman, because I just can't imagine the U.S. government giving these psychological analysis tests and not using it for something. Do you think this might be how they pick people to go on certain type of missions based off of these analysis to see how they might be able to hold up in certain type of situations?
That's a great question, and I can see where the answer to that is 100% yes. When it comes to a lot of the military selection process, you're going to go through those regardless, depending upon what job that you're considered for. So you're going to undergo that. And in many of the things that I did, one of them was law enforcement, actual law enforcement, and counterterrorism. And they're going to take the measure of your personality and more than just the personality test before they ever put a weapon in your hand and give you the color of authority to go out and use it. So those things would be used together to make a determination on whether to invest you with authority in the organization that I work for.
Very interesting. If you are listening in, if you have any commentary or experience with regards to the personality test you've had to take for a job. If you want to chime in to respond, the number again, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. If you want to email, you can do that as well, untiljustice@gmail.com. If folks had questions about what they've heard thus far, or if you have your own experience that you would like to share, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, cool.
Hi. I have a workplace racism. So I was at work, and you know I work at, well, you don't know, but I work at night. I do the night, the graveyard. So I came in at the front desk. So this Caucasian male came in. I guess he lost, his key didn't work, so he needed me to make him a new key, so I make him a key. Then he came back down asking for cups, so I give him some cups. So then he starts talking small talk about politics, and then he's asking me, what is he asked me, did I know what, well, I guess he wanted to know who I was voting for, or how was I voting, and I guess it's already automatic that I'm voting for Hillary. So I said, well, I don't know. I haven't put a lot of thought into it. You haven't thought about it? I was like, well, I haven't thought about it. What else do you need? So then he says, no, I want to talk about this politics stuff, you know, because I want to know, well, what are you going to do, you know, because I'm voting. He said he was voting, I forgot what he said. Some term he used, that he, I guess he was going to vote for himself. So, and I said, oh, okay, well, yeah, go for it. He said, you could do that too. And I said, oh, okay. Well, no, thank you. Because I just might win. So then he's going back and forth. And he's like, I'm going to come back down and we're going to talk about this again. I was like, well, I don't have any more words left to say. So you don't have to. So then he calls saying that his air conditioning doesn't work. So I was like, okay, well, that sucks that your air conditioning doesn't work. So he's like, well, can you come fix it? No, because I'm not maintenance, so I'm not coming to fix your air conditioning. And, well, I know you can do it. You can do it. I just don't know how to work it. I was like, well, if you've been fiddling with it for hours and you can't work it, I so can't work it because you're a whole man, and I'm not, no, that's not what I do. So you can't fix the air conditioner? No, I'm not maintenance. I can't, but I can put in a work order. Well, the air is so hot in here. It's like, well, open the window. I can't help you. So you're telling me you're not going to help you? I said, I'm telling you I'm not maintenance, and I'm not worried about your air. You can either open the window, and that's it. There's nothing I can do because I don't understand how it's 1 in the morning, and your air, you didn't have no air at 10 at night, so I don't have no air. I can't help you. So you just can't help me? You're just telling me no? I'm like, look, I can't help you, and I got to go. I have to conclude the call because I have other things to do. I can't just stand here talking to you about your air. Well, what can I do? Is there anybody you can talk to? I was like, look, I'll call the manager. See, they can help you with some air. I don't know what to tell you because there's nothing that I can do to fix it. I'm not. Well, you can come up here and look at it. I can't look at it. I don't know what I'm looking at. So I'm not coming to your room. Well, I know you can't. And then so I said, well, look, I'll call the manager. So I called the person that had that I relieved and to see, I was like, well, what are the odds of the air not working in there? And she's like, well, what room was it? And I told her his room. And she said, well, he just came in. He was drunk earlier. He was so drunk earlier, he couldn't remember his room number. I'm like, well, hell, he must be still drunk because now he's trying to get me up there to fix his air. And I was like, why people scare me? I don't know what to do now because I'm here by myself. So then she laughed a little. She's like, well, just don't go up there. I was like, I was never going up there because there's nothing for me to do. And she just said, well, put in a work order. So I put in a work order anyway. And then he calls back down. Well, did you talk to somebody? I said, yeah, I talked to somebody. And they said they'll deal with it tomorrow. Well, I'm just so hot in here, Mary, and I don't know what to do, and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, my God. Well, I can't help you. I don't know what you're going to do. So he just kept calling, so he must have called like 10 times. So then he said, well, do you think if I slip my number down there and you could just, you know, when do you take a break? I said, I don't take breaks. Well, you think if I slip my number down there, you could, you know, we could talk? I was like, no, you're not going to have me call on camera talking to you. I would never do you like that. I said, I know you would never do me like that because you'll never have action at me like that. It'll never happen. So if I just slipped you my number, you couldn't call a good Southern boy? No, I couldn't. Well, next time a good Southern boy talks to you like this, then maybe you shouldn't give him your number either because you won't give me your number. I was like, I'll never give you my phone number. I don't understand. I don't understand any of this. I was like, and I have to go. I can't just stand at the front desk answering all your phone calls. Well, yeah, so this went on and on and on. So this is at like 1, 2 in the morning.
So by the time the sun comes up, let's say 5 in the morning, he comes downstairs because somebody just stole his truck, his work truck, and 3 other trucks. So now he's spooked. So he's,
somebody stole our trucks.
I was like, oh, that's too bad. That's what you get. You're terrorizing me. You should have been watching your truck. That's too bad.
So then the person that owns the truck, the one who sent them there to stay while they do whatever construction they're doing, he came down. He must have had to use the restroom, so I let him in the back to use the restroom. He's like, yeah, I own all the, you know, I own the company that they're working for. He's like, and I just came down because they stole the trucks, and I'm waiting on the police to do whatever they do because they had cameras on them. They didn't steal the newer ones, but they stole the ones they could steal and took them in local areas and probably took their tools or whatever they can get off of it. But I just thought that was weird. I didn't know how it happened, but I just thought that was weird that his truck, the trucks come up missing while you're bugging the heck out of me about fixing your air. But I just thought that was so gross that, oh, white people are so terrorists, and they don't have any respect, and they just say anything to anybody. And, so that was my workplace racism for this week. And then thanks for listening.
White people and alcohol. I feel like somebody has commented on the dangers of that for years now. Man, that situation. I think you did an extremely intelligent thing in making sure that you were not coming up to his residence or his area for any reason to check the air conditioning or what have you. There's no telling what he could have done, particularly if he's under the influence and that late at night. The whole thing sounds suspicious anyway about his vehicle coming up missing. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he knew about this or this was some scheme or what have you going on. In my view, just outstanding job, just sticking to, you know, I have things to do. I cannot be messing around, wasting time with you. Whites do that all the time. We talked about this for years as well in terms of just wasting our time. This is, you know, a staple aspect of racism, white supremacy, just to clog up your time so that you cannot get things that you need done, and particularly wasting our time, whether we are helping them. Or just to allow them to nag us so that they can talk and we can support them and are cheering them up, that sort of thing. This has been just going on for years under the system. It sounds like this was probably an older white guy. I would have just been doing everything, which it sounds like you did, just trying to do everything possible to get him off the line. I'm not maintenance. As you continue to, I'm not maintenance. We can put in a work order. Moving forward, we will, you know, speak with you later. We have other folks to care for, other things, other duties, responsibilities that I have to attend to. And again, this is probably another one that I suspect other people can relate to, where whites, where they're unsatisfied. I think Roz has talked about this as well. Anytime where you're having to deal with white patrons and they're unsatisfied with your response, they have some problem and they're upset that the nigger is not responding to their problem the way that they want, where they just nag and nag and nag and it stays. They can, you know, eat up an hour of your time doing this. And sometimes it can get real terroristic if you, you know, are not sounding like you are properly empathetic to me as a white person about my air conditioning or whatever my gripe is. It can get really, really nasty. I think you did a really great job of not going and putting yourself where it could be something where he gets more volatile, gets violent. With you in a direct physical manner, going to attend to him.
And I think he was trying to set up a sexual liaison because, you know, why come, hey, you don't want to come see a good Southern boy? I mean, when I think of a good Southern boy, you're trying to put on the Southern charm, probably what they did to little girls right before they raped them on the side of the road or something, you know. Come get over here and sit on my lap or something. You know, it just sounds real... real nasty. And their history, I wouldn't be surprised if he went up in his room and he, hey, you know, why don't you come sit down over here for a second, you know, and tried to come on to you in some way because in his thick mind, you know, this nigga's going to let me do it. I'm a good Southern boy.
Agreed. Might even be worth making a report about that behavior, just to get that on record. Same thing, you know, they make paper trails on us on jobs. That might be something that would be worthwhile reporting, because I'm sure this is not the first time that he's engaged in those type of antics on the job. I don't know if you have other black people that work there, particularly if you have other black females that might be in a similar position where they might be working and they're the only person on staff, or where he could potentially, you know, get them alone. It might be good to get that on record that, you know, he was engaged in this sort of behavior and it did not feel safe.
I didn't feel safe. I felt I was weirded out because I'm there alone, and the other blacks that are there, to whom I called, that relieved me, she's black, and she got her own problem. So I did report it to her because she was supposedly the lead of us. My manager is white, and her manager is white, and they all kind of stick together. I noticed the whites, and when I reported, I just don't see my manager doing anything. I could report it to the district manager because that's who I literally communicate with. I don't communicate with my manager at all on any level, because she's very unprofessional. But I did want to do something about that because I thought that, because it makes me uncomfortable when because it's a hotel. So there's a lot of creepy whites there, and it's real creepy.
What you could do is you could go to work tomorrow or the next time this individual does this. Yeah, go tonight and send yourself an email explaining exactly what happened. Send it to your job email and then send it to your personal email so you have a copy of it for yourself. And if anything was to ever happen, you could go back to your emails, print them off, and show your boss that there's been saying this, and because of your attitude, I didn't want to approach you with it, but I've been taking accounts of what's been going on, and I have detail, and because you're doing it in an email form, you have the time and the date on it, and that's a legal document.
Okay.
I'd include that he was under the influence as well, and particularly since it seems like somebody else could corroborate that, since you contacted the other staff member and she said that he was drunk earlier that day, I guess, before all this happened with the AC and him trying to get you to his room, to put that in it as well, that, you know, this is not just someone who's calling and harassing, this is someone who might be under the influence, and that is exacerbating the situation and just further why you did not feel safe as a black female working by yourself dealing with this individual.
Will do, because the time stamp from the camera, because they had to look at the cameras when the truck got stolen, all four of the trucks got stolen. And I don't know if his boss, when they looked at the camera, if his boss saw him downstairs talking to me on the camera, because I leave during the day, but I haven't seen him anymore, and he was supposed to be there for at least another week. So I don't know, but it was, everything happened. It was just so weird the way it happened. I mean, all of a sudden, all the trucks get stolen, all false. Yeah. But I'm sorry. I'll mute my line. I'll just keep rambling.
No apologies. No apologies. Definitely serious. Stay safe, man. Stay safe on the job. That, you know, I would take that real seriously, and not just with him, but anybody else, be really mindful about not being caught someplace alone up in their room and that sort of thing. Just things can take a very bad turn quickly with whites. That's in any situation, job or no, but particularly if you're in a situation where you're working late nights and there might be whites who are under the influence, drugs, alcohol, both prescription medication, whatever the case may be, just, you know, be really, really safe. Might even be a good idea to have, whatever you think would be good to help protect yourself. If you are into firearms, if you can get a concealed carry permit, mace, whatever, have something to make sure you can defend yourself in that environment if you're going to be working late nights and you already have concerns about the environment.
Beth, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
That's kind of like what thoughts come to my mind, because you know, I would say from a quote unquote romantic standpoint that we as quote unquote black males, you know, some black male would come to her aid and whatever, but that's not realistic at all under the system of racist white supremacy. Black females as well as black males in their places of employment are going to have to basically work methods and tactics and strategies to be able to defend themselves, even to the point that what you're mentioning right now. And my only advice would be to have that knowledge before, as you're going through the procedures of becoming employed, and the moment that something like that comes up, you have to go on the offensive in the sense of dealing with it right there, right then and right there, not letting it linger because it's only going to get worse. And it's so unfortunate, but that's if somebody can tell me better, that's the only recourse that I know of, because we are by ourselves as individuals. As far as that concerned, I experienced that a lot on the job that I retired from. Although I had several people that I can go to and they can come to me, as far as from the standpoint of codified, you know, or some kind of counter-racist dialogue that we can exchange, because we were kind of like organizing off duty also at the same time. But when it came down to it, when they called my name, it was just me. Talking about supervisors or chiefs or whatever, that sort of thing. It was just, you know, just going to be me and within that meeting, you know, as far as that concerned. But I would like to mention my workplace situation for this week. It's actually something positive for the most part, if I can.
Oh, let's hear it.
Oh, okay. Yes, they were there. It was two of the young people that were mentioned for having straight A's. And one of them was from the position that I coach. The other was a defensive lineman. I'll start with a defensive lineman. He is kind of small for the position that he plays. He's a musician. As I mentioned, he has straight A's. His family is from Haiti. Now the racist part is due to him being very heavily melanated. I'm trying to put a picture into the listener's head about him. He's very heavily melanated, very muscular, heavily melanated. Kind of like sculptured features in his face, but yet I can tell that he has been ridiculed all of his life, unfortunately, and for how melanated he is. And similar to what I heard about Clarence Thomas, correct me if I'm wrong, Gus, is that he was ridiculed also as a child. Is that correct? For being heavily melanated?
Absolutely, called ABC America's yes. Blackest Child.
Yes. He has this quote-unquote girlfriend. Now, I never saw her personally. But if she's talked about a lot, and if she's not a white female, she's very close to looking like one to me. I just saw a glimpse of her. He had the nerve to have her on his Facebook. Instead of having his image, he had her image on the Facebook. We played a game last week some of the young people from the other team got access to his Facebook, and apparently they said some disparaging things about this this person, and it upset him so that he didn't have a good game. He didn't have a good game. I kind of like to myself, because it was a, I don't want to say 100% that I'm about 90% that it was a white female, because I just glimpsed a picture of her. From my understanding, my opinion, I think he worships this female. Because without me even trying to pry about his personal life in that way, the talk about himself and her is well publicized within the school itself, and that gives me the impression that due to this negativity that he's been indoctrinated with, I'm talking about even to the point to where I had to mention this to some of the coaches who are non-white black males to stop calling this child Spade. So it's not just with other children. It's also with so-called adults who would carry this on to him, and in turn, that may be helpful in his decision-making process. And in turn, the results is with this either white female or female who looks like a white female. But the other player, black male, very quiet, very unassuming, but straight A student. But he has at least about maybe four or five college offers for a full scholarship, college offers. Matter of fact, there's a coach that I worked with that's now a college football coach that just made him an offer at Appalachian State this afternoon. So, very constructive. That's just some, if anyone didn't know, that's some of the more constructive reasoning behind high school sports. With me, if the NFL or the NBA or the rest of the professional sports didn't exist, it wouldn't bother me at all, as far as that concerned. And I wouldn't have any interest anyway to coach beyond the level of high school, because I might as well have stayed on the job that I was on if I was going to do that, because you're dealing directly with white people in one faith. You're dealing directly with white people on a daily basis. That's just two things that, for the most part, are constructive. But hopefully the first child that I mentioned would somehow grow through that, the advent of anti-blackness. And because I've been trying to share with him every opportunity that I get about the silliness that he's been confronted with for most if not all of his life, and to kind of like assist in bringing some clarity to his understanding about who he actually is as a person, and to kind of like dissolve a lot of that negativity that he's been indoctrinated with. Still working on them, but thank everybody for listening.
Appreciate that. That is pretty sad, particularly if even the adults are engaging in, the anti-black names that are.
Well, they recently stopped. They recently, so without nobody coming to me. In a sense, I think they listened, because I said it boldly right in front of them. I said, stop calling him Spade. You know, stop, and I gave reasoning on why. Stop calling a spade. And I noticed when fall practice started, I started hearing them call him by his first name. And so it was nobody but me that was bringing that logic to them. So I was assuming they was going straight off of what I was saying, and it made sense to them. And because nobody actually brought it back to my attention or made any argument or anything like that, because I was certainly prepared for to deal with that. You know, in other words, because I've been talking codification. You don't, like Mr. Fuller said, you don't have to really say anything about race or white supremacy. Just talk about justice. And automatically, you know, especially white people, they're gonna know what the alternative to justice. It's injustice. And they also know that materializes into what we call racism and white supremacy. So I just brought that to them in that way. I said, in order to reduce conflict between people, you should only call them by the name they would like to be called, period. Call him, his name is Dimitri. That's his name. Call him by that name. You know, and like I said, nobody ever came to me about it, you know, or negative, whether from a negative or a positive side. But I did notice the coaches that was calling him Spade stopped calling him Spade and started calling him by his first name. But so codification works.
Even on the job. Amen.
Yes, sir.
And that certainly, I think that's something that can be applied in the workplace. I know I've heard Mr. Fuller talk about that and others as well in terms of even, I know we have people that are listening right now who are not into, I don't make friends with other non-white people on the job and we're not pals and they might mess you over on the job as well. That's certainly true. But you can still employ counter-racism in, I am not going to call any black people on the job anything other than their name. I am not going to engage in any anti-black behaviors. And just that alone can have a constructive impact. I have seen the exact same thing that retired firefighter just shared where, and you're not even bringing up white supremacy explicitly, just, you know, I don't name call. I'm going to call if the person's name is Dimitri or Mr. Johnson or whatever their name is, that's what I'm going to call them every time. And I have seen where that can end up spreading, where people, and just that alone, that would be huge. That would have such a constructive impact, particularly as it relates to black self-respect and just minimizing conflict. It would have, and I have seen it, not it would, it does frequently have such a constructive impact for us in helping us minimize some of the problems. And just, you never know, if you just want to take the example that he shared with this young black male, you have no idea the amount of damage that sort of stuff does, where you're being called these names all the time and people constantly degrading you, particularly if it's degrading you because you are highly melanated or anything in association with you being a black person. Just those old insults and name calling and stuff, and particularly it gets carried out for the duration of your life. Just having that eliminated in one area of your life, it can just be such a relief to not have to hear that, to not have to hear those insults. Man, it is beyond refreshing. So that's something I hope we can all employ on our jobs, all areas of people activity, really, to try to minimize the anti-blackness that we are participating in, and to the best of our ability, discouraging other victims of racism from participating and promoting that sort of incorrect behavior as well. That is outstanding work, Mr. Retired Firefighter.
I'm working at it. I'm working at it.
For sure. Other folks, if you all had questions about anything that we've heard thus far, or if you have your own situation that you would like to share, feel free. Dial in, or if you're already with us and you have a hand up, feel free to share.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm ready to share my workplace observations. One actually happened on the way to work, and this is to show you how tacky, trashy, and trifling white women can be. I was heading into the job, and I stopped to get something to eat real quick. I usually like to take, like, my herbs and stuff that I take regularly. I like to take it in the morning so I get something to eat to kind of help facilitate the absorption. So I stopped by to get something, and there's this white lady wearing a Halloween outfit begging for money and begging for breakfast. So I'm listening to actually an archive episode of The Cow. So she's asking a couple of other people before I get this. So I just bypass her having her conversation and I get in the line. So as I'm standing on line, she comes up to me and she says, excuse me. So I just look at her like she, you know, was a piece of feces that got stuck to my shoe. And I pay her no attention. I keep listening to the program. And I go back to waiting to be served by the person at the counter. So then she gets extra annoying and she comes around and says, excuse me again. So then I get really annoyed. I pull my headphone out and I say, what do you want? So then she says, can you please give me some money? I'm homeless. And or can you get me a breakfast sandwich or something? I just looked at her with the look of death and I said, not this morning. And then I just put my headphones back in, and I just went back to waiting to be served. And at that point, she got the message, and she backed off. Again, she should have known from the way I looked at her the first time, nothing was going down. But she had to be white and just press the issue until I had to really just really give her the tactical death stare for her to back the heck off. Horrible. Now, on the job, this is an observation that I found very telling because this is the first time I've experienced this so direct on the job. So we're sitting in the meeting, a team meeting for all of the people that are under this particular supervisor, which includes myself. And it's about maybe, I say, about 12 to 15 people in the room. And we're having what they call our little huddle. So when we get there, we find out different changes in the company or things that are changing for how we do certain processes and procedures in dealing with the seeing the different members that are seeking assistance with their health care coverage or things of that nature. So as she's having the discussion, she brings up the fact that next week is supposed to be Customer Service Appreciation Week. So we all started laughing just because of how horrible things are on the job and how crappy we're all treated in that department anyway. So everyone just really started cracking up. So as she goes through, she said, well, there's different themes for each day. And one day you can wear your favorite team's football shirt. Another day, you can wear, like, pajamas to work. Another day, she said, was called Black and White Day. So everyone kind of looked at each other strange with Black and White Day. So she went on to explain that, you know, you can wear something black and white to work that day. And then she actually threw in a phrase. She said, well, Black and White Day isn't Racism Day. And everybody just started laughing. I just looked around at everybody because I didn't think it was funny. But everybody just looked around. I mean, started laughing. And then I just thought to myself, that's very interesting. So Black and White Day is Racism Day, and that's what she equates it with. So I didn't say anything. I just looked at everyone and kind of took in my surroundings because the vast majority of people in the room were non-white. There were a few other black people, but they laughed with everyone else. One of them was a homosexual male. So I just kind of took in everyone's reaction, and I was the only person who really didn't find it funny. I didn't choose to say anything in the moment because it just didn't strike me as something important to speak out about. I just made a mental note that she actually said something like that in the middle of this meeting. And I actually wrote it down and I put it in my little file for later, like I do with anything that's race related that takes place in the job. So those are my workplace observations. Thank you.
Treachery of commuting under racism, white supremacy, man. Just with those themes that they have, right? The Black and White Day and pajamas and the jerseys. My recommendation would probably be to not participate in any of that. Roz seems pretty codified, so it seems like he probably wouldn't be anyway. But that seems like just the type of thing that, like I said consistently, just in terms of as victims of racism, we really want to make an effort to set a tone of being serious on the job in how we conduct ourselves. And I just don't think, I think people have talked about it before where they see if it's a non-white person and they come and they have a wardrobe in alignment with whatever their religious practices are or what have you, white people don't bother them. They don't picket them. They, you know, allow them to do their thing. I think the same thing, black people, victims of racism, we're terrorized all the time. I just don't think it's sending the correct signal under conditions of war being waged against us to show up and you're in pajamas or footies or whatever because it's pajama day or, you know, it's football day, just whatever the nonsense is. I'm here. This is what I normally wear. for work, let's go to work and be serious about that. Let's get it done. That would be my recommendation on that. As I said, the horrors of the workplace commute, we've talked about that before, too. I think that's a part, unfortunately, of workplace racism and what you have to deal with in getting to and from the job. Well done. Not helping whites. And that comment right there that the race soldier on the job made about Black and White Day is not supposed to be about racism, in my view. That, once again, they reveal that they are not ignorant about racism. That is at the forefront of their mind. Anytime any concept, any notion of colors comes up, that is what they're thinking about. The war against people they say are colored. Other folks that chimed in, if you had either questions on what you've heard thus far, if you had your own situation that you wanted to share, your line should be open. Feel free.
Go ahead, Thomas. I'll go in after you.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to say to what Ross said, you know, it's funny that everything he said is the same things they start these kids doing in school. It's like a social conditioning. Like, my kids get this pajama day, and, you know, they got to wear a particular color scheme one day. Just this week, they had to wear last week a sports team day. And it's like, you know, it's like they're conditioning them now in school to accept this crazy behavior, because they do that same stuff at jobs I've had, and I just don't understand it. Now, as for the white person asking for change, you know, unless I see a coworker around, I usually always bring up, you know, why would you ask a black person for change knowing how much money white people have? Why don't you go ask one of your people? You know, that's usually my response to that, some kind of inclination that you need to be asking white people for change, because white people, I think they love to ask black people for change because somehow we're the people that give it to them. And I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Rob in Wisconsin, are you going to share, sir? Not here. Don't know if he hit his mute button or not. Oh, looks like he disconnect. Well, when he calls back in, we'll pick him up. While we're waiting for Rob, any other folks, if you all had questions, commentary you wanted to share, feel free.
Yeah, dear.
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. Two points that some of the previous male callers touched on. I think that was Thomas that spoke about the behavior pattern of white people who like to request money, you know, or try and ask only black people for money. Like, I've had that happen to me, like on the way walking from work. Like, basically, it'll be some white people walking in front of me, and like, I remember one time, it was like a couple of white people walking in front of me, and I was talking to another black person, and I think I had like one of my headphones out or something, and I was focusing on the conversation, and the guy says, he says, well, hey brother, can you spend some change? So I didn't respond. I just kept walking. So, you know, I was talking to the other black person. So, you know, but you can ask the white people that, you know, they're going to get in this, you know, BMW and all that, but didn't ask them. So I guess that is that thing to where they tend to get that from other victims, non-white people. And the issue with being very melanated, a heavy concentration of melanin, like I can see like how I'm perceived. Like on my job, like it's people, I guess, who have a sense of appreciation for me. But like I can definitely sense that, like a lot of contemptuous, I guess, you know, behavior toward me. Like I guess it can be kind of subtle, because I can definitely tell like the difference in how I'm looked at, even like regardless of how courteous that I am, and the most even like rude white person can definitely get a lot of, you know, I guess constructive attention to them, and they don't have to really do, you know, anything that people look up to, I guess, if I could say that. So I could definitely see the difference, you know, just in paying attention to that. And I had a quick conversation with one of the judges upstairs, and I guess he said his JA was gone because I was going to pick up papers from him. And so I guess you're taking care of everything solo or something, I said. And he says, yeah, well, I kind of always been a bastard. So I laughed at what he said because I guess he was making fun of himself. So, you know, he laughed as well. So I still didn't understand what that really meant. So that was one incident. I had a black person. She had an accent. I guess she might have been from possibly an African country. And, you know, I was trying to help some kids with some crayons and some paper because we like to make sure we accommodate the kids, you know, the young children, I guess, to keep them busy when someone's coming to get like a marriage license. And the lady, she's a black female. She says, you know what, you African Americans, you black people are just being killed, you know. And like it was just like out of nowhere, you know. And she said, yeah, you're being killed and you have it hard, it's very difficult. But I'm thinking, man, you know, she under the same pressure, you under the same system. She, you know, just as subjugated as me. But you know, possibly that was a lot of confusion coming from another victim. So that was another incident. And like in the same area, like I'm a training with two black females and another white female. And she was talking about how, you know, like the white person that works with us, she was like, man, you know, such and such, she's going to vote for Donald Trump. And, you know, I just don't get it. You know, we talk and everything, and how can you vote for him? You know, basically, I guess, trying to bring up that she suspects that Mr. Trump is a racist, and this person that she has conversations with, you know, that works with us, is going to vote for him, you know. And she seemed very confused by it. So, you know, I didn't really offer too much commentary. And she, this same female, had she was becoming very upset because this white man that came in there, he was very discourteous and saying like, hey, you know, when I ask you something, I expect you to know it. And then I guess the white woman was kind of getting upset, trying to answer his questions, and you know, she was like, I went to talk to her, and, you know, I guess I was trying to get her to calm down, you know, when hardly no one was in the room, because the guy reportedly, he said something about, yeah, you know, this used to be a good courthouse, and now we have the funny farm in here. So I guess she called the guy racist in front of everybody, and then she said, like, when we was talking, she wrote down on a sheet of paper saying that these are two things that I don't do. She wrote it on a piece of paper. She wrote the word racist, and then she wrote a line, and then she said another thing that I don't deal with. She wrote another word, and it was ignorant. So so I thought about that word ignorant. I was like, oh, no. No, white people aren't ignorant. So I guess that's how she interpreted it. And one last thing was the clerk, the guy who's running, the white guy, he's been pointing out some very wicked practices this guy's done. Like I mentioned before, he decided to retire 1 week before the due date for anybody to put in a bid to run as a candidate. And he did that so it could make someone pay $8,000 to run against him. So this guy's apparently a write-in. And he mentioned that his son has the same initials, so that he suspects that he did this. So the people who's going to vote next month will vote for the same guy because they think they'll be voting for the guy that's already been in office. So just more very evil or racist practices by suspected white supremacist. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.
Wow. Just the ignorance, that's every day, all day long, somehow when racists practice racism, it somehow gets chalked up to ignorance. That major part of the problem right there. We need to stop thinking that this is ignorance or crazy or whatever other terms that are used that do not accurately capture the pathology, and this is deliberate, scientific pathology of racist man, racist woman, racist child. The last portion as well, because I remember you had talked about that before with this guy that's supposed to be, I guess, leaving office, where he deliberately waited until very close to the deadline to make this decision so they would compromise other people if they were interested in trying to take this position that he is vacating and then setting it up so I guess his offspring or whoever is related to him can get the position since they have similar initials and people will be confused. Just even though that might not necessarily be a direct act of racism, in my view, it's the same type of behavior where, again, it's this is not ignorance. This is deliberate deception and benefiting from confusion. That's something I'm going to bring up again on the compensatory call in this weekend, but why I maintain making an effort to strive for accuracy, that in and of itself will work against racism. You don't even have to mention the term racism, just making an effort to strive for accuracy. We want things to be correct. We want things to be truthful. That works against a system that is held together with deception. There was some other, we had another campaign thing again, so I said it's going to be more and more. That's going to come up, I suspect, real, real hard the last 30 days as we go into the voting in November. Just be mindful about that. It shouldn't be anything where you get emotional, that people are jumping up and down and saying that they're for Trump or whatever they're saying about the election. As I said, just have your code for how you want to respond, what you want to say, what you don't want to say, and I wouldn't care if they came in and they were dressed exactly like Donald Trump. They had Donald Trump on their cell phone. They had all this paraphernalia on. I can't wait. Let's get that wall up. Put you niggers in place. That's interesting. Just make note of it, document, and keep rolling. It should not be anything that gets you upset and just already have in mind what you want to say if they should ask, you know, who you're going to vote for or what your plans are for the upcoming election. If other folks, if you all have questions, comments, you want to make sure you get in, should be with us. I think Rob in Wisconsin should be back. Are you again with us, sir?
WR?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I got kicked off the line. greetings to Gus and the rest of the callers and listeners on the line. Rob chiming in from Milwaukee. Just had a couple of observations from the classroom. Starting yesterday, it was a black female, one of my classmates, her son is in high school. He attends a predominantly white school, and she broke down in class. The previous week, we had a discussion about the professor asked us, what did Black Lives Matter mean to us? You know, so everybody was chiming in about that. And this week it was a continuation of the conversation. People was kind of giving a little commentary. And she spoke up and said that a teacher had said something really racist to her son. And she was very emotional about it. I can tell that she had been just kind of blindsided by this act of terrorism, and you know, her response was, you know, my family, we never talked about racism. And I found that very uniformal, almost. You know, it seemed like as black people, that's just kind of what we conditioned to. We conditioned not to talk about racism, and then we encounter a situation like that and just be totally taken off guard. But so she said that she didn't appreciate the way that they were treating him. She said that they were treating him like a criminal. And one of the most things that stood out to me, she said that, you know, his grandmother is part Indian and white. you know, and how am I supposed to talk about this with him and he not feel differently about his grandmother? You know, that really just stood out to me. It just showed me how confused we are about racism, and knowing when we see white people in relationships with black people, a lot of us as black people who do not see that as a racial maximum aggression, you know, and that was one observation that I had this evening. This professor, white male, he makes a lot of sexual references during his lectures. Okay, so during the lecture this evening, he's talking about something, and then he just say, you know, everybody has a trampoline. Everybody buys trampolines. Now, that already stood out to me because I'm thinking, like, hell, where I live at, nobody got trampolines in that yard. So that was kind of already him, I guess, speaking to a maybe to the more white people that's in the class or whatever, but to make a general statement like that, like, everybody has a trampoline. Now, that ain't even true. But so after he said that, you know, then he jumps to people's children are going to lose their virginity on the trampoline. Now, we're not talking about sex in any kind of way, but, you know, he just kind of finds a way to throw that in there. And I just kind of find these sex. Lecture, he referenced to driving past and seeing people having intercourse on the front line. Now, again, it's no connection to the actual lecture that we're having. Okay, so he's explaining some theories to us. This is a sociology class. Okay, so he's explaining deviants in a deviant group. Okay, and so he's explaining these different theories. And it's like a... Well, I don't want to go into the theories, but to save time, you know, he's talking about these theories. So I raised my hand. I'm like, that sounds like, you know, the word nigga being attached to black people, you know, and that sounds more, you know, that sounds just like black people experience in America. And so he like, you know, kind of do one of those numbers to signal that I wasn't exactly hitting the mark, which I knew I was. Okay, so now... we watching the video, okay, and the video is a connection to the theories that he just explained, and we supposed to watch the video and connect the theories to the video that we watching. So the video was very disturbing. You have a white documentary maker on a safari ride, basically, and just getting a upside view, close ringside view of mistreating the niggas. And so, make a long story short, when the video over, a black female in the class, he asking about how we thought about the video, what we thought about the video, a black female raised her hand and said, I think the video confirmed what Robert said earlier. And thank you for taking the call.
Wow. What the mother who spoke up in class who said that her son was violated by some teacher, did she say what the teacher said to her child?
Nah, she didn't want to get too explicit because I think it is some, you know, it's some white people in the classroom, a couple white people. And so I didn't think she wanted to get explicit. And another thing, like, what kind of, you know, I think brought it to a head, this white girl came in and she was like, yeah, you know, I was at work. I'm a massage therapist in a predominantly white area. And she said that, you know, from the conversation that we had last week, I was basically in tears at work. Some older suspected racist white woman said that she didn't want a massage from a colored person. And she was like, you know, I just immediately thought back to this class and the question that you threw out there. And I'm just kind of looking at her like, nah, no, you know, anyway. But yeah, that's all I had.
Wow. Always grand. My sympathies with the black mother and that sort of situation where you have whites where they come in and comment, even if she's alluding to the fact that she was allegedly in tears about racism and it's so terrible, like that's just gross is an understatement. But I have seen how sometimes that can undermine when black people are attempting to have honest dialogue about racism, when you have whites who are inserting their comments as though they're so shook up about this and they're so sad and crying and all the other nonsense that they do to just further practice racism and fake us into thinking, fake us out and have us thinking that, oh, yeah, we got, you know, someone who's legitimately concerned about the plight of Negroes. The latter one, I think it is always tremendous, even though, you know, we shouldn't be looking for it. You know, United Independent, you just go out and do what you do and no expectation of that any black person is going to agree with you or support what you have to say. But I think it's always great when you can make commentary, present your view on racism, white supremacy, and a white person tries to belittle you or you don't know what you're talking. What are you talking about? This is, you know, related to how black people are mistreated. And then you can have a black person who is there to confirm. Yes, I see the same thing. And I agree. That is always awesome. And I have seen where that can totally shift the conversation when the black people do not just accept what the white person says, when they actually are in agreement, united, independent, and how they're going about just being honest about white supremacy, racism. That is fantastic.
Gus, can I add one more thing? I'm sorry, but I think that this is... Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So when he's explaining this thing, right, now I wanted to kind of get him right when he said this, but I was reserved because I felt like that I would get a chance to interject my thoughts into the conversation. So he wrote Rebel, okay, and one of these theories, and I'll just go. So his definition for the word rebel was rejecting both of the themes that he had, mainstream goals, accomplished by legitimate means. Okay, so he said a rebel rejects both of those but suggests new goals and new means. Okay, now I can go with that. So now he's like, now we're going to look at some examples of rebels. And he said Martin Luther King was a deviant rebel. Okay, now let's say I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not really know what's going on. And, you know, you put that out there that MLK was a deviant rebel. Okay. Then he said another example of a deviant rebel would be people that homeschool their children. And then he said that he wasn't exactly sure if the homeschoolers would be a rebel or not. But, you know, he was definitely sure about MLK. He was just, you know, just a rebel, a deviant, and I thought that really stood out to me. And thank you.
Tackiness abounds. Tackiness abounds. Now, and a lot of that would come down now. What do you mean when we say legitimate? What do you mean when we say mainstream as well? But it's always some way, regardless of who the black person is, where they are going to be talked about in that manner. I think with Rosa Parks, my BFF, Amy Goodman, they described her as a troublemaker when they were doing a tribute. I think it was the 60-year anniversary of her refusing to get up on the bus in Alabama. This was 2014, where they continued describing her as a troublemaker, as though that was something to be proud of. I know Madiba. Where people, same type of verbiage, describe him as a troublemaker, where it'll be these type of terms where they will allege and try and spin it and say, oh, yeah, this is, you know, they were great and they did great things, but it's the same type of terms that have connotations and denotations that, no, these people are just niggers, troublemaking niggers at that, not people who were fighting for justice. And note, he did not pick out any whites to say, yes, this is a deviant rant. Even attaching the word deviant in it, I thought we were just describing what a rebel is and laying out a definition. Where did the word deviant come from? What do you mean deviant? Standard. Well, whites do that sort of thing on a regular basis, and a lot of that happens especially in the academy, where you have lots of whites who are very knowledgeable about the power of words and how they condition us to think and respond just with the way that you use words and even the way that you define words, since he did attach a definition to some of the terminology that was being used. Other folks who are with us, please do not wait till the last minute. If you have not put a hand up, if you have commentary, do not wait till we get to the final moment to decide that you want to chime in and have a commentary or a question about something that has been shared. Any folks that we have not heard from at all? Anybody with us that we have not heard from at all?
Hey, Gus, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. tonight, I think I'm going to be formal. My name is Ramon, and I want the audience to know that. And I'm calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Chiming in, I first of all just kind of want to touch on some of the racism, you know, in the workplace. I don't know if my story actually connects, but maybe it does. I think forms for people who work for themselves, such as myself being an independent contractor, often I realized for a minute there I kind of lost touch with reality, not realizing to keep my eyes alert until just the other day. I reminded myself of my duty, I guess is what I want to call it. But I happened to be in a customer's house where we're doing some remodeling and some, you know, alterations and things. And this is a customer of mine that calls me periodically throughout the year, you know, has done it for many years. So they're a repeat customer. Only the first time have I ever really had a chance to see the depths of their living style when we were asked to do some alterations in their basement. And I couldn't help notice, you know, but I try to keep myself composed. But I noticed there's a workstation in their basement, and I'll just say one of the family members makes it a hobby to make bullets. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because I don't know how this ties to, you know, workplace racism for people, but for me, what I get out of these type of things, you know, is that, you know, I get to go to these different neighborhoods where a lot of people don't get a chance to see how these people that we talk about see things and really talk. The funny thing is one of my plumbers that I hired to do a lot of work for me, and I was already aware he's a white man. I knew these were the type of people that would, you know, keep guns and rifles and stuff. But him and I happened to see the gun-making station, and the son of the owner happened to be home that morning. They got to talking, their little stuff, so I'm standing there. You know, I'm like, I don't feel like I need to say nothing, because this is a conversation I might learn something from. However, I got a chance to see my plumber in his true nature when the weapons and stuff come to play. And this is something I realized, you know, that I don't think a lot of us really take seriously. Now, I don't know where a lot of other people listening may live, but I can tell you here in the country lands or in the highlands of Colorado, people believe in that stuff. You know, it's the home of the musket and all of that. As the conversation progressed, the son told me that his dad makes about 1,000 rounds a day. So I was like, you know, wow, you know, is really shocked by this. And I guess the reason why I wanted to just say this is because I don't know if we understand the depths of really what these people perceive as an enemy. And here's what I got from my plumber when he started to tell me. He said he believes that, you know, we have a problem with tweakers. That's his words. So drug addicts is the only way I could take that. Gangs. If anyone knows anything about Colorado Springs, we've had to correct people here because I'm originally from Oklahoma City. So I know what slums look like. And, you know, we constantly, I mean, every once in a while you hear people in the city try to say, oh, you know, the ghetto part of town. It's like, Colorado Springs don't have no ghetto. Matter of fact, we barely have trash on the ground. So it's apparent to me, no matter what we do as a people, this is why I agree with you, Gus, on your definition of racism, white supremacy. It's an active cooperation, period. And if anybody is fooled by that, I would encourage them to truly ask that question that Dr. Francis Cress Wells has said. I asked a guy at a gas station on my way home from work getting gas. I just asked him, hey, man, what do y'all talk about? What do white people talk about when there ain't no black people here? And his response, or, you know, any people of color or anybody of any other group other than white. And he, you know, first he tried to sell it to me as though, well, the people I hang around with, you know, we don't really talk about much. I said, well, what about the ones that want to, you know, build buddy-buddy relationships? You know, what do they talk about? He's like, oh, yeah, some of them be very nasty. You know, I don't listen to that stuff. I don't get involved, you know. And I just told him, I said, well, if you stand there and listen and your response is not to say that's not true, then I believe that you're practicing racism myself. Personally, that's just mine. Going back to my plumber who I said showed, I mean, I've seen this guy really get a hard on. I never saw this before out of him. But when them bullets, that weaponry was in front of him, I really saw the different person in him. So we ended up having a 2-hour talk on my time about this whole conversation. I knew this guy for 14 years, and this was the first time we talked about racism. My understanding of how he sees it was that there is no racism. It's just people who do bad things that need to be dealt with. I don't accept that excuse. And I told him that. I said, personally, I think you're just trying to make me feel comfortable. I said, so let me tell you, there's nothing you could ever say will make me feel comfortable about what white people really truly feel, because I've lived the experience. I know what they're about. So my reason for calling in is just to say, I want people listening to this your program to understand. And I don't think I'm telling anybody nothing new, but I just want to reinforce that thinking that we really cannot let our guard down. And I have to say, for anybody in my position working as an independent contractor, particularly in building, I've learned now that I have to go to work with ways of protecting myself, that if somebody was to catch me off guard while I'm with my back to them, you know, because something I noticed with them is they like to creep up on you when you're working. And I don't like that. Digressing off that, I wanted to make a comment about that girl, Friedman, or whatever she was on your show yesterday. I only caught the ass end of it, so I had to go listen to the podcast this morning. I think I mentioned to you before in the past, my wife says I must be a white girl magnet because I have to literally beat them off of me. I remember a scenario with a female like her when I was about 18 years old, a girl who wouldn't stop chasing me to the point that I just had to ask her, what do you want?
It does sound like we veered off of workplace racism a little bit. I do try.
I'm sorry, Gus. I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that about, you know, working in, you know, an independent contracting. So I'll leave it at that. I'll mute my line.
For sure. Do you want to give us your commentary on Kelly Freeman, the compensatory call in this Saturday? I would be interested in hearing it, but once we deviate off workplace racism, it seems to just pick up momentum where other people are off topic and talking about other things. That is fascinating, your experience with the white folks in Colorado. Just for reminder, context, Colorado, this is where the shooting, Columbine High School, where the young white savages went and shot up all those people. I think that was 98, 99 when that took place. And then you had the Aurora shooting that took place. I think that was back in 2012, somewhere around there.
And he got a hospital, Gus. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but James, the guy you're talking about, he ended up getting sent to the insane ward down in Pueblo, Colorado.
Right.
That's your answer for that.
Was not shot after he had shot all these people in the theater and killed all these people. He was not... killed, like so many black people, with a book or Skittles or whatever. He was taken into custody and given his trial, his day in court. But this is, you know, Colorado. Even Crystal Tyler, I believe, is out in those parts, since she got mentioned during the program with Kelly Freeman a couple days ago. She wrote The Wheat Money and is married to a black crack addict in Colorado. But I think that is absolutely, in terms of just being able to take that seriously, I'm glad, because I've said consistently, I think it would be helpful if we had black people who are what they call self-employed dial in to share how they experience racism, white supremacy on the job, because you're still going to be having to deal with whites. So it's not going to extinguish your experience with racism. It'll just change how you are having to deal with it. And actually being in a white person's house and having them making all of these bullets, that is nonsense to think that they're doing this. The enemy, the person on the target invariably is someone dark. And even that was even stated in the Columbine shooting, where they had a white female witness said that one of the shooters shot and killed a black student because he was black. That's what she said explicitly. This was in the interviews hours after the shooting. But just keeping that in mind at all times and taking it seriously that this is war waged in all areas of people activity, and just being real serious about what that means and how we go about dealing with racist man, racist woman, racist child, and just really not trying to minimize that that's what it is. And, you know, adjusting our behavior accordingly. I think that would be best. Has there been, I guess, any incidents with the white person that you had to employ to do plumbing for you? Has anything popped up with dealing with this person?
No. The thing about it is he's an older gentleman in the 60s, so he kind of, you know, he understands when to kind of, you know, quell itself down. So I know he's really experienced in this thing. But I will say this, though. I hired a gentleman one year, one of my neighbors, white guy, little young guy, just had got back from the war. So I brought him in, and, you know, on our personal time, we talk and visit a little bit. And, you know, he was one of them guys that he felt that these things that, for example, I'll give you an example. He made a joke one day, said, "What do you call a black woman pregnant? I mean, what do you call a black baby, you know, when they're still in the mother's belly?" And I said, "Well, what? You know, I just want to hear what he had to say." He said, "A cotton picker." With the basically, he made the reference that if a woman put a tampon in while she's pregnant, the baby would be a cotton picker. So, you know, I just want people to understand we don't escape racism regardless. You know, it really is real. And that I'll mute my line.
Appreciate the racist jokes. Always fascinating. You get to see it. That's what they think of all of us. Black males, black females, black children, even before they are born, subject to racism, white supremacy. Folks have comments. Make sure if you have commentary and we haven't heard from you, you should get your hand up now. Please do not wait till the last minute to dial in if you have something you would like to share. Is there anybody that we missed? Anybody who has a hand up that we have not heard from at all?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
How's it going? This is Ori in Dallas. Greeting to you, Gus. Greeting to all the callers. I wanted to say, well, first off, kind of going back to the beginning of the show, Thomas, I believe, made a reference to white people talking to them about Donald Trump. And I wanted to say I must work with some very refined races because I haven't heard anything from white people about Donald Trump, even with all of his views. You know, I haven't heard anything about him. Get into my observation. I want to start out by saying I may be wrong about this whole thing. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist or anything, but I'm eager to hear what the other callers have to say, any commentary on it. But recently, a week ago, we just got done doing our annual wellness reviews. And so what that is, you know, when you go and have your wellness screening for your health insurance and stuff like that, we were told that it was required to have a screening if we wanted to pay the minimal amount. And so we were also recently informed that if we haven't made any, I guess you could say, progression from our last wellness screening, that we will be subject to a payment increase. And so I felt that, you know, the company was practicing racism because, you know, white people know that black people, we don't eat the adequate food to sustain optimal health. I'm going to steal that word from Roz. And we don't get enough sleep to sustain optimal health. So I just figured that this is them trying to get us to pay a higher insurance rate than what's normally paid by the other white workers. And with that said, oh, I also wanted to add in for any new listeners that's listening in tonight or will be listening to the archives of this show, always ask questions, always document, and watch how white people use words. They are a master at using words. One word that comes to mind is tasteful. They always use that word tastefully. And like I've been reading my employee handbook, and I've seen that word, you know, several times, and I, you know, come to the conclusion that tasteful is however they want to perceive it at that time. You know, I have a lot of tattoos, and you know, I ran across the section, you know, talking about tattoos, and they were saying, you know, they have to be tasteful. Well, you know, to one person something can be tasteful, to the next person something, you know, is not as tasteful. So, you know, just watch how white people use words, and I'll mute my line on that note. Oh, and kudos on last night's show. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that. The infamous Kelly Freeman. That word, tasteful, that's why I've been encouraging folks. Read your policy and procedure and do not wait until, you know, things have hit the fan, so they say, before you start reading it. But that word, tasteful, exactly as you said, that's going to give whites a lot of discretion on the job. Just as you stated, that's so subjective. What is quote unquote tasteful to you might not be tasteful to me, and invariably is probably going to be a white person who gets to make the decision about what is quote unquote tasteful. That is not, in my view, that just leaves a lot of room for interpretation. And that's why I've said, when you see things in policy like that, that's where they have the room to practice racism. With the first part of what you shared, and certainly other people can offer their views as well, it reminded me immediately, Mr. Demery Four, he participates in our book study session regularly, see if he's there tomorrow, but he shared, this was some years back, we were talking about workplace racism, and he shared that on his job, they are required to get some sort of physical checkup, you know, on whatever the intervals are, if it's a yearly thing or every other year, whatever it is, they're required to get physicals. And what he was observing is that somehow they would screen the black people, but something would happen where it would be a conversation or something would take place to where the black person, when they would go to do their screening, they would have been agitated. So their blood pressure would be higher, and all these other, the stress, whatever stressor they had encountered before that, would end up impacting their screening. And so then it comes out like, oh man, your blood pressure is, you know, such and such, and it's a little bit high, and oh man, this might be a risk factor. So it was impacting their employment status if they were going to get these physicals, and they were saying, oh man, your health is not good, and you might not be able to maintain employment because we got to have healthy employees. And it was seeming like this was not a one-person thing. It was seeming like this was happening to quite a few black workers, where they were getting these physicals that might jeopardize their continued employment. And I think that that is widespread, even though you were saying that it might, your assessment was that this might be something to get black people to have to pay a higher rate. I think sometimes this is done deliberately to totally disqualify and or exclude black people from employment, and they just have little deceptive ways of doing it. If you're going to be called in, you got to have a talk with your boss. Like I think even what the female caller mentioned before, they make a submission, hand in this assignment, and then you meet with your boss. Like, oh man, you messed this up. This isn't what I asked for. You got to go back and do this again, and then you got to have a back and forth with them where you're upset, raises your blood pressure and all that, and then it's, oh, okay, now it's time for you to go in and get your physical. I think this is a standard tactic. I think this is something that whites have done regularly, and it could be either or. As you said, to make black people have to pay more for their health insurance and or to be a way to exclude you from employment, to just say that you're not healthy so you can no longer work here. Did other folks have thoughts on that? I don't know if we have other people who have to have any sort of screening, health screening or what have you for their job. But any other folks who have thoughts on that experience with that?
Well, I just recently went through a health screening for a job at a hospital, actually. And I had to go and take a physical and everything. And I think from the way it looks, this is a common thing that people must have to do every year, because this in particular place we have to go, it seems to only deal with the hospital employees, and I see a bunch of people sitting there with their uniforms on waiting for this or that. So I think that will be an experience that I will be dealing with in the future.
Interesting. And absolutely, they already know in a system of white supremacy, they've done studies on this where black people don't get adequate rest because of racism, white supremacy, and same thing our caller in Texas said, don't get adequate food. They have what they call food deserts, and not having the resources to purchase adequate food, not having information about what would be correct things to eat. They already know this, that they have severely compromised our health, medical apartheid. So they have a variety of means. That would certainly be something if other folks, if they have commentary, if you listen to the archives and you want to email in on the health screening aspect, I think that would be good as well, because that's certainly something that I suspect there are quite a few black people who have experienced, and probably one of the other subtle ways that racism, white supremacy is in operation on the job.
What I did do was I declined to take the flu shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very adamant, like this was going to be a big problem. So I reached out to two people. Gavaz gave me someone's name. I sent the email to him, and I sent the email to Dr. Curtis Duncan, because that was the first guy I ever heard talk about the flu shots extensively. And he actually emailed me back, said, absolutely, don't take it. You know, fill out that paperwork, and once you fill that paperwork out, there's absolutely nothing they can do. And I filled the paperwork out, and I submitted it, and right away they said, okay, no problem. I just have to wear a mask when I'm around patients, and I don't have a problem with that.
I also declined to take the flu shot, and they didn't, you know, harp down on me about it too bad, but they did question me several times. Like, they wanted to know, like, are you sure you don't want to take the flu shot? And I was like, no, I don't want to take the flu shot. So, yeah, they're pushing for that also.
I just declined the flu shot last week. So, yeah, I know what that is. And it wasn't, they just ask you, and if you don't want it, it wasn't a big deal. For those that wanted it, they provided it there on the job, and that was it. I just told a number of black people, I said, I don't do vaccinations. I don't take anything that they provide. And a couple other black folks were like, I'm not taking the flu shot either. I said, very smart move. I said, you should get Curtis Cost's book. That was the person who I recommended Thomas get in contact with. But, you know, Curtis Cost's book, Vaccines Are Dangerous. I think every black person should have that in their library. It will change your life. Thank you.
Which person was it? I heard Mr. Thomas in New York said Curtis Duncan, and then Rod said Curtis Cross.
Rod gave me a name, and I also emailed Curtis Duncan. The person Rod gave me the name of, he never responded, but Curtis Duncan did. He responded to me, and he told me, you know, do not take it. And he pretty much said that form that I had, once I fill it out, it was nothing they were going to be able to do about it.
Oh, okay. Well, they were both on the program, but I just wanted clarification about who did the contacting. Both of them have constructive information, and I concur about the whole vaccine thing and or flu shot specifically. I concur. That's something I would not recommend taking. Although I do see evidence that it looks like whites might be getting more aggressive about making people take flu shots and or vaccines. I have been seeing that. I think it was even a medical employee where she got, they were really pressuring her to take the flu shot, and she didn't want to do it, and they were talking about jeopardizing her employment if she didn't want to do it. So that is something I would pay attention to, just kind of keep an eye out, different news reports and what have you, in terms of them talking about it, and if there's any controversy of people not wanting to take flu shots and or vaccines.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I get the name of that book again?
Vaccines?
I was going to say it's called Vaccines Are Dangerous, and the author's name is Curtis Cost. He has excellent research and a lot of up-to-date articles on his website as well regarding all kinds of rogue medical experiments and things that you can avoid and how to avoid certain things, legally speaking, like for your children and things of that nature as well. He's a great site and brilliant young black male. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to find that and put that in my library. I appreciate it. I'm sorry. I also wanted to speak to the guy who spoke before me. I believe his name was Ramon. I just wanted to say he was right, though. I know ghettos in Colorado Springs. I've been there several times. That we have a few officers out there, and there are no ghettos. I haven't ran into any. And, you know, ghettos are just code words for where the black people live, you know, black neighborhoods. And I mean my mind.
Gus, can I be here?
Yes, sir.
This is Ramon. I didn't get the gentleman's name that was asking about me. I would just let him know if he wants to talk outside of this forum, he can reach me at electronicproducers@gmail.com, and I'll mute my line.
There you go. Feel free. Other folks have commentary, anything, workplace racism that they wanted to share. I did read an article. It was about Marilyn Mosby. I was going to bring it up on the compensatory call-in, which I still may. But I also thought that that was workplace racism as well, where they were talking about all of the strain that she and her husband have experienced over the past year plus since the death of Freddie Gray, shot and killed by enforcement. Well, excuse me, he was not shot and killed, but in my view, killed by Baltimore's finest. They will just say that he died under suspicious circumstances while in police custody, but they were talking about all of the strain that they had endured and difficulties on the job when she signed on. To me, it very much sounded like workplace racism for what she's doing, the job that she's been trying to do, and the impact that it's had on her, even the strain on her marriage and her family. You have to check. It was in the New York. Well, I don't know when it was in the physical paper, but it was online yesterday. I posted it. You can check it out. It is a little lengthy, but I found it quite interesting. As I stated, I might bring it up on the compensatory call in this weekend. But in my view, it would certainly qualify as workplace racism, some of the things that they mentioned in the report. Anything else, folks? Commentary, either personal observations or if you had questions about anything that you have heard thus far?
Yeah, I wanted to say the brother in Colorado Springs, what he said that was very interesting. And, you know, these are the white people who, you know, are sitting there making bullets and stuff. You know, like, I coined them the Duck Dynasty boys. You know, like, those are the last white people black people want to deal with. You know, this dude is sitting there making guns and bullets. You know it's for black people. I mean, who else are they going to be going around here shooting or in threat of shooting? And I just think that was a very good observation he made, because that's very dangerous white people there. I mean, those are the ones that are going to have nothing better to do when something pops off than to go into the ghetto, no fear, and kill as many black people as they can find. I mute my line.
Hey, Gus, I'm sorry me and the brother have to feed back to each other like this, but I just want everybody to remember something that you say on a regular, is that we have to not stereotype the type of people that would be dangerous to us, because if all we're looking for is, you know, people with three teeth, you know, tooth, like you say, I mean, I know from experience that's not true. You know, I look at them truthfully, in my opinion, as These are the pawns of the game. These are the ones you can, if I can easily pick you out, you're not a threat to me. I tell people around here on the regular, you walking around with a gun on your hip, I've already got the jump on you. What you going to do? You know, so these ain't the people I be talking about. This, matter of fact, I'll just be honest. The person that, the house I'm at, this is a Pentagon person, suit and tie. I had no knowledge of this myself, and I'd been in their houses a couple of years back to back. That's what I want us to be more concerned with, understanding. The most dangerous people don't look like, don't look like Cooter. You know, this is what we have to accept, that we're going to have to learn to pick up our dialect, our game, our understanding of language and the type of people, you know, that won't just overtly come out like that. And I'll mute my line.
One of our previous callers, she is also in the Colorado area. She's a black female, and she was sharing there's a white physician, not, you know, some down-and-out overalls-wearing white guy, a white physician who makes a substantial salary and, you know, has a tie and a suit and all of that, gets up and goes to a hospital to work, medical professional. And guns, brags about having guns, photos of his guns all around, same type of thing, right in Colorado. I don't know if it's Colorado Springs, but right there in Colorado, same type of thing. And I think that's the important thing to really get through, that this is white culture. This is at the root of white identity, violence against non-white people, especially black people, and to just be very clear about that. That's why I say all the time, it's not anything to play with. It's something to take very seriously. Even we had our female caller out in the Bay Area when she was talking about the situation where the white guy called and was intoxicated and trying to get her to come to his room. That's what you have to have in mind. These folks are extremely dangerous, and it does not take very much time at all for things to end up becoming a life-threatening situation. Take it real seriously in terms of what it means to be classified as white.
Just to piggyback off of what all of you are talking about, it really makes me think about the fact that when white people are probing and asking questions about us, they want to see how in tune we are for things like their proverbial race war as well. So you'll have people who wear suit and ties coming there, like Gus was just saying, the doctor, you know, the last person you would think that would have an arsenal in their house, but yet they have that arsenal. And on the weekends, they go out with their militia groups and, you know, they hunt niggers and bears. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff they do for fun. So all white people are deadly. And even the toothless ones. I used to work with some, too, out here in Central Jersey. And they used to go hunting. And I had no idea. They came to work with venison one day. And they used bow and arrow hunting. They shoot with .22 rifles. And, I mean, you know, you would think they were dirt road white folks, but, you know, these white folks get their bows and arrows out, and they go hunting bears during bear season, and they hunt venison during venison season. And this is the stuff they do for fun. They kill for fun. So I agree. You know, we have to be very cognizant of that. And, again, the fact that they're always drunk or high, so that's a whole other thing to look for, because that also can trigger, you know, their lack of inhibition and facilitate their terroristic behavior as far as them getting into these sorts of antics, whether it's, you know, in a public space when they're riding to or from work, or if you're out with your family, or in very inconvenient, vulnerable positions. So just be very aware of those things. Thank you.
Amen. Make sure I get our plug in, since our book that we are currently reading, even though it is fiction, it does have quite a bit of analysis about racism and workplace racism specifically. Mr. Sam Greenlee, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, will be here tomorrow. Same program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We are picking up, I believe we're at Chapter 9, so feel free to tune in. I'm enjoying it. We'll be looking forward to another segment tomorrow evening. Folks have anything else they want to make sure they got in? Hopefully we will not wait till the last minute. Observations, questions, your own situation on the job that you would like to share, anything else? Everybody's content. Didn't miss anything. All right. Assume everybody is good. I will still say this is not a spectator program. We still had a lot of folks hanging out on the phone line, just listening. I suspect all the folks who are listening, I suspect that you too are having some incidents on the job. I think we should make an effort to try to share, just again, to be active with regards to racism, white supremacy. I think we have a lot of folks who do have some understanding of racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works. It is about putting that understanding, demonstrating and putting that into our actual behaviors and doing more with that, trying to share, get that information out to other people and to just do more. Racists, they are not ignorant with their knowledge, expertise about terrorizing black people. I think we have to do the same with our understanding of what it means to be white, our understanding of racism, white supremacy, to put that in action more frequently, more frequently, more frequently. Thanks to all of the folks for participating. Grand to hear from everyone who chimed in. We will do it again next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I will again say the election. That's, I am sure, that will be more frequent as we get closer to November. So just have that in mind. Don't be surprised. And document it. Folks are, you know, whatever they're saying about any of the candidates, Trump, Hillary Clinton, whatever, just, you know, be prepared, not surprised, and already have in mind what you're going to say if they ask you anything about the election, who you're going to vote for, or what you think about the campaign, what you think about the debates. If anything happens newsworthy related to racism, already have that in mind so that you're not surprised with the shootings. I know that's been a big deal as well. Have that in mind as well. If you are going to say anything at all, I would minimize what you have to say about it. I think it's great. I think Thomas gave us an illustration last week that I have not even been able to keep up with what's going on. I don't even know what's going on in North Carolina, what's happening down there, just so that you're not pulled into, because it's been my experience that whites frequently, they try to lure us into these dialogues just so that they can make a further assessment of how informed we are, how confused we are about racism, and or just to get us upset where they can make whatever comments that, you know, Mr. Scott got what he deserved and Terrence Crutcher got what he deserved and that was a bad looking dude and he wasn't complying and you all just don't respect him for or whatever. To just say those sort of things to, again, get us riled up, get us angry, and then that might be the time that they spread. Oh, yes, by the way, you have your physical today. We have our health screens. We need to go and get your blood and all that. So I would just make an effort. Do not get involved in any of those discussions on the job if it is coming up. And if you are asked questions, that's what I recommend all the time. See what they think. Ask them about their opinion. That's interesting. I'll have to check more into this because I just haven't been following the details. That's my codified suggestion for how you want to deal with all that. I've just seen too many times where black people get in those sort of arguments or situations where you're trying to share your view and what you think about all this, and it ends up not working out to the benefit of the black person. So just something to keep in mind if that is coming up on people's jobs, in their workplace, what have you. If you have questions, suggestions, gripes, complaints, you can feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Again, if it's workplace racism, I will certainly share on the program. We can keep it anonymous if you have concerns about, you know, your employer finding out or any of your colleagues or what have you finding out. We can keep it anonymous for you. Thanks again for everyone tuning in. Hope it's been a constructive investment of your Thursday evening, and we will be here tomorrow. Sam Greenlee, the spook who sat by the door, will be here Saturday as well for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If folks, our caller, who want to share about Ms. Kelly Freeman, you can make time for that and other commentary as well this coming Saturday evening. With that, I hope folks will stay safe. And again, since we had another incident, whites, alcohol, one of the worst combinations in the known universe. That is something that we for sure should take very seriously. I strongly encourage sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Our behavior should reflect that war is being waged against us at all times. If you are a soldier, a serious combatant, you do not want to be intoxicated when things are going down, when you cannot respond adequately to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. And what's happening, the war that's being waged against us. I've just seen too many instances where black people being intoxicated ended up just causing further problems, making it easier for us to be violated by racist man, racist woman, racist child. You never know when today will be the day that you bump into Darren Wilson, Daniel Holtzclaw, any other race soldier, badge or no. Whites, they are super dangerous. Make sure that we understand that. Take it seriously. Pass that along to your children. I never heard that when I was growing up. People talking about alcohol and drugs, cigarettes for sure. Make sure that's included as well. But I never heard that tied into it in terms of why you want to be sober if you are a young person and you're going out and partying for the first time, that, hey, we are in a system of racism, white supremacy, you being under the influence of anything. It just makes it easier for whites to victimize you. That's it. Thanks again for everyone tuning in, and we will speak with you all in about 24 hours. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.